from runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the weekly internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin introducing show number 24 with guest Brad McGeehee, recorded Thursday, September 9th, 2007. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, offering professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hi there, you're listening to Run As Radio, and I'm your host, Richard Campbell, and with me as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. What's going on, Richard? How are you today?
I am gearing up for Barcelona. It's still a ways away, but there's so much to do. The main thing we're working on right now is pulling together all the great prizes for the 64-bit question.
Right.
So on the Monday, right at the beginning of the conference, during the opening of the whole vendor floor, and the vendor floor on the IT Forum Week in Barcelona, absolutely huge. We're going to be there. We've got a nice little stage, and then we're going to be running this contest called the 64-bit question, where we're going to pull people from the audience, ask them an IT-related question. If they get it right, they win a prize.
IT trivia and knowledge tests, huh?
Yeah, it's absolutely. And it's fun. Believe me, I'm not trying to make anybody look dumb there. We're just going to, it's multiple choice. You always have a chance, and I might even give you a couple of hints along the way.
Cool.
But the goal is to sort of introduce you to some great products from our sponsors and have a little fun. And so we're working on that right now. We've got some of the folks that are at the IT Forum are going to be there talking to us about what they can provide for great prizes.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And Speaker Idol as well.
His Speaker Idol is all ready to go. Apparently, the contestants are already lined up.
Terrific.
So it may be too late. You can go check out the Tech Ed Europe website. There is a Speaker Idol session where you could still submit, but a lot of them have already been picked. So you're running out of time. IT Forum, by the way, well ahead on registrations. They're going to sell out months in advance.
Really?
It's really, really, it's going to be packed. In fact, they're expanding the facility to hold the number of people that want to come.
Well, that's great. I'm really looking forward to it. Never gone to Tech Ed Europe. I've been to Tech Ed in the U.S., of course.
Right.
And saw you at the last one. It's actually when we met for the first time face-to-face.
Yes. And if the rate things are going, the second time we're going to meet is going to be in Barcelona.
Yeah, I think that's actually just about right.
So that's the week of November 12th.
Yeah.
And the Tech Ed site's easy enough to find. Go ahead and take a look. We're going to be there. We'll be there the whole time. Still working on some panel discussions we want to have as well. So we're going to be really busy at Tech Ed IT Forum in Barcelona.
Between all the events that are happening in Tech Ed and some of the things I'm sure that we'll record and the panels, it's going to be a busy, busy week for us. But we're definitely looking forward to it.
Well, I was really pleased with the shows we got from Tech Ed US.
Yeah, they were great.
We got to record face-to-face where the audio quality may not be as high, but I thought the show was really dynamic.
Yeah, and you know, actually, I was pretty impressed with the audio quality. It really turned out pretty well, and I certainly enjoyed, I always enjoyed doing these shows with you, Richard, and with our guests and for the audience, but it certainly was fun for us to be able to sit together and do it that way as well.
And while we're planning out the shows we're going to do in Barcelona, if you have any ideas for us, people you'd like us to talk to, or topics you want us to address, send us an email, info@runasradio.com.
You know, what would also be great is, you know, if you're just planning on being there, you know, just let us know.
Yeah, you bet.
Tell us what it is that you're interested in. Why are you going? What is it that you hope to get out of it? Tech Ed could be a Run As question, whatever you like. Just drop us an email. We'd be curious to hear from you.
All right, Greg, let me introduce you to Brad McGeehee. Brad is an MCSE plus I, MCSD, and a former MCT with a bachelor's degree in economics and a master's in business administration. Currently the director of DBA education for Redgate Software, Brad is an accomplished Microsoft Server MVP with over 10 years of Microsoft SQL Server experience. Having founded the popular community site SQLServerPerformance.com, where he now acts as the technical editor and forum moderator, Brad specializes in SQL Server administration, performance tuning, and high availability. He regularly consults with multiple clients, helping them to get the most out of SQL Server. Welcome, Brad.
Hi, welcome.
Just right off the bat, big fan of Redgate. Just wonderful set of products. You know, I wouldn't administer a SQL Server database without them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they do great things, and real big player in the community, too. It's a lot of fun to work with their stuff.
Yeah, I first learned about Redgate about 5 years ago when I had my website. I first started out, I had no advertising whatsoever, and they came on as my second advertiser and were with me for over 5 years before I sold the website last summer. And at that time, they were my biggest advertiser. And once I quit my full-time DBA job I was doing in Missouri, and before moving to Hawaii, I also sold my website. And then about that same time, Redgate contacted me and said, hey, you know, we've known each other for a long time. Why don't you come over and visit us in England, and we will talk about maybe doing some work. And I did some work for them on a consulting basis, and then they hired me last spring full-time to be their DBA education director.
And that's really, I think, the topic we want to get into today is this whole concept of getting a good education and to be a DBA. It's really not that easy. You know, I was out searching around just in really in prep for the show of if I wanted to be a DBA cold, and I don't think it's a job that people pick as in childhood either, where would I start? And, you know, searching, you don't get any easy leads. Where do you start?
That's exactly it. And I started thinking about it again back when I had my website, because I used to have people who'd write me and say, hey, I saw your website. I want to become a DBA. How do I do it? Well, I was back about 5 or 6 years ago when I first started getting letters like that or emails like that. And I decided to write an article basically based on how to become a self-made DBA. And I wrote that article. It's basically how you teach yourself to become a DBA, because you can't really go to college be a DBA.
No.
You know, you can get classes in database theory, but you don't learn how to do the day-to-day DBA administration tasks that everybody needs in the real world. And even if you go take MCSC-type training or other kinds of DBA database training, like one-week classes at various places, you just get the very basics. Just get you started. And after that, you're pretty much kind of on your own. So it's very tough to go anywhere, learn to be a DBA, and then get a job as a DBA. Is actually almost impossible.
And the only way to get a job as a DBA is to be a DBA.
Well, most DBAs, I found out, come from two areas. They either come from the development side, or developers who get interested in DBA-type work, or the more the IT professional networking people who get databases or even get assigned databases. Not that really their choice, and they have become DBAs. They have no choice about it. It seems to come from one of those two angles.
It must be one of those rules. If you can grasp set theory, we have a job for you.
Exactly. And a lot of people start out with in the Microsoft world, of course, didn't start out with SQL Server. They started out with Microsoft Access.
Right.
And I was one of those kinds of people, too. At the time, Microsoft Access came out 1.0, and I can't even remember how long ago that was, early 90s.
Yeah, that's like 1992.
Yeah, something like that. When I remember when it first came out, I was working actually in a marketing department for a software company. He was selling software for the heavy duty truck market. And I was the director of marketing, and I needed some way to manage all the clients. And at that time, it was on a mainframe, and so I took it off the mainframe, put it down on my desktop in Access 1.0. And that was my second taste of databases. I'd used them a little bit before, a few years earlier. But of course, right away, you found out how powerful they were, and at the same time, how unpowerful Access was.
Access was great as long as the row count didn't rise much above one.
Yes, exactly.
And as long as you had one user, single user.
And what happened to me is I had been in the computer field for a while as an IT professional and got a little bored with it and went out into the marketing area for a while and did that for a number of years. And then got tired of that and decided to go back into computers again. Of course, I was out of the computer market about 4 or 5 years. As you know, 4 or 5 years is like a lifetime.
Oh, yeah. That's two or three versions of all of the major products.
Right. And so when I came back into it, I was actually living in Hawaii at that time in the mid-90s. And at that time, Microsoft certification programs had just started. And the Novell programs had been around for a little while. I was looking at which classes to take because I needed to get my skills back up to par. Unfortunately, at that time, there's only one place in the entire state of Hawaii that offered Microsoft training as only during the day when I worked.
Right.
So, but one company did offer Novell training in the evening. So I went ahead and took that, even against my better judgment. But I needed some kind of certification, and I felt at that time, just to get me back started going again. Of course, as soon as I got my certification, I immediately went and got my MCSE right afterwards. I did that all through self-study. And I eventually ended up teaching as an MCT in Kansas City, Missouri for 3 years. And that's the point where I started using SQL Server quite a bit. They needed a SQL Server trainer, and I'd already had a very good background in databases. So I got certified in SQL Server and started teaching it week after week after week after week after week. And did that for about 3 years. And then after that, I went in and started doing full DBA work at real companies, and have been doing that since then.
It's amazing how effective teaching something it is to clarifying your own knowledge about it.
Exactly. When you try to explain a concept or something to somebody, you have to figure out the best way to do it. And of course, that forces you to think, you know, how do you explain something difficult in a very simple manner? It's just a matter of, you know, thinking it through. And of course, through a lot of practice, I figured out the best way to do things. You know, when I first started out teaching, I wasn't the greatest teacher in the world. It was hard to express the concepts. But after a while, you kind of figured out the routines and examples to do, and it became more automatic. It became more fun, too, the more you did it. So I came up through the teaching side. I said IT professionals, the teaching, and into DBA work. There's as you probably know, most of the listeners probably know, a huge demand for DBAs right now, especially SQL Server DBAs. I have my resume out on monster.com, for example, and I literally get emails every day wanting someone wanting me for a DBA job. Just for my resume, just on monster.com, let alone the other contacts that I have. And it's gotten to almost routine where I don't even bother answering them anymore because I get so many of them, I just delete them. So there's a huge market out there for DBAs, but like anything else that we've talked about before, it's hard to become a DBA, and you have to basically start somewhere. And for example, I had someone email me about a year ago. He said he was a developer, and he wanted to become a DBA. And the reason he wanted to become a DBA was because he had seen a couple things. One, he saw that DBAs were making more money than he was as a developer, which is true. DBAs generally do make more than developers. And two, he noticed that when people got laid off at his company or outsourced, his company is always developers being laid off or outsourced and very rarely DBAs. So he wanted more money and more job security. So he just wanted to know what to do. And one of the things I suggested was, of course, volunteer. That's what you have to do. Is whatever you're doing right now, you probably have some way of relating to a database one way or another. And most people, many companies where you don't have professional DBAs, people just get assigned the task of a DBA, and there's lots of opportunity in those companies to go and say, hey, I want to volunteer to do this. You know, I'm going to go out and take this test, or just let me do it. I'll learn it. And very often, the manager will say, sure, nobody else wants to do it. You go ahead and do it.
So you're not saying volunteer for free. You're saying volunteer within your job.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah, volunteer within your current job. Because almost any developer anymore is going to be talking to a database at some point. Or almost any IT professionals will be managing indirectly a SQL Server probably somewhere in their company.
Right.
And but again, DBA work is specialized, specific work that a lot of people aren't really familiar with in terms of how difficult it can be. I mean, Microsoft tries to make SQL Server seem like a really easy product. In many ways, relatively speaking, it is. But again, if you look at it in other ways, it's also very complex.
Yes.
And it's getting more complex with every new version that comes out. And it really takes someone who's a specialist in SQL Server to really get the most out of the product. When I go to conferences like PASS and sit down and talk to people at the meetings, it's always very interesting to listen to them and find out why they're there. And I ask them, you know, have you been to a PASS before? And the most common answer is no. Get a lot of new people, it seems like every year in past. And I ask them why they come. He says, well, I just took over this responsibility and my boss wants me to learn more about SQL Server. I hear that over and over and over and over again.
How, I'm curious as to whether you would delineate, and if so, how would you delineate the difference between a database administrator and a database engineer?
Okay, that's an interesting topic. There is a lot of confusion in the marketplace, not only among DBAs themselves, but especially among IT managers. Exactly what a DBA is. And that's an area that's really interesting to me because I think PASS needs to take a more forceful point of view in that, try to actually delineate specific job titles and what they are. because you have your database administrator, you could have a database engineer, you have a database designer, you have a BI engineer, you have a reporting person.
I've even heard guys called database developers.
Ah, yes, database developers. And some people seem to specialize in one niche. Some people try to do it all.
Right.
So I think it's impossible to do it all well. That's just too much information. I've never been able to do that.
Well, especially when you get in, if you're going to try and include business intelligence in that, which I think is an entire other field.
Yes.
Much more about information than it is about systems most of the time.
Mm-hmm. So what I've found interesting, though, is a lot of these, like the jobs that I get, people contact me and say, hey, we need someone to do this job, so-and-so, and they say they want a DBA. A lot of times I'll look at the job description, and they're not actually describing an administrative DBA, which is what I do. They're describing a developer.
That database developer. In some cases, I think the term you use, Greg, database engineer, are really the guys who build the data-related code for an application.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
There needs to be some kind of a better delineation about what the different job titles are. What I like to see is an organization like PASS, who's focused on database professionals, to help differentiate that in people's minds. So when an employer wants a database architect, or they want a BI person, or they want an administrator or developer, you know exactly what those titles are. Right now, DBA seems to be a very, very generic, all-encompassing term.
So shall we take a stab at it, try and define a DBA and a DBA engineer?
You're going to take a stab at it, or am I going to take
I think I'm going to get you to take a stab at it.
That's a good one, because I've not thought through that as like I want to, but I'm actually in the process of doing that. I'm actually working on a book called How to Become an Exceptional DBA. I've started it, and I haven't finished it. I hope to have it done by the end of the year. It's going to be an ebook, actually, and it's going to be distributed free from Redgate Software. And part of the book is going to be talking about those kinds of topics and subjects. But I know DBAs best from the ministry point of view, because that's where I come from. I'm the kind of person who specs out the hardware, sets up the hardware, installs SQL Server, configures SQL Server, sets up the jobs, sets up the backups, tests the restores, sets the database recovery plan, or writes it and puts it into place. I set up clustering. I monitor the server to be sure it's running correctly. I do performance tuning when there's problems, those kinds of things. It's the administrative task of a DBA.
And when you say performance tuning, you're not talking about optimizing a stored procedure so much as creating the right indexes, making sure the data structures are right for efficiency, archiving, those kinds of things?
The performance tuning kind of crosses borders, because so much of performance tuning actually has to do with the application, how it was written originally. There are certain things I can do from an administrative point of view, like the indexing and maybe hardware that will help tuning. But most of the tuning problems I've seen are actually code-related. Bad stored procedures, bad architecture in terms of design. In other words, using cursors to store procedures, those kinds of things. And so I get into a lot of that whether I like to or not. So, and I consider, a standard everyday DBA, it's a term, when I think DBA, I think administrative DBA. If I want something else in terms of a person, I would say a development DBA or a database architect, designer, or a BI person or a reporting person. So the term DBA, when I think of it, I always think of it as administrative DBA.
Right.
One of the things that also I've been kind of looking at too, which is kind of interesting in terms of my research for this book, is how much DBAs make. And
when they are in demand, so in theory their wages must be going up.
They are. Most recent survey done by salary.com says that the average DBA in the United States, well, let me specific, is average in the United States of the entire 50 states, is $86,789 per year. Where the average salary for developers, on the other hand, is $74,136 per year. So it's definitely an advantage of being a DBA over a developer.
If that's where your interest lies.
That's something that you want to pursue, and of course, that you enjoy. What also interests me, though, is like anything else, that's an average, and average numbers are sometimes kind of deceiving. What's interesting is that the top 10% of all DBAs earn over $108,000 a year.
Uh-huh.
While the bottom 10% of all DBAs earn under $65,000 per year. That's a pretty wide spread.
Yeah.
And that got me to thinking, what differentiates those people? Why are some people making over $100,000 while other people are making $50,000-$60,000 a year or less?
Right.
And I started asking people and talking to people about that and what they thought and looking into that. And basically, what I've noticed is that people make the big money. They are what I would consider professional DBAs. What I mean by that is basically a person who says, hey, I'm a DBA. This is my job. This is my career. This is what I'm going to pursue probably for the rest of my life. I want to be the best I can be at it, learn everything I can, and do a really great job. They're really serious about being a DBA, taking all the responsibilities a DBA has, like protecting the data for their organization. And then there's the other kind of DBA I would consider the, I guess, non-professional DBA, but I don't, that's not a very good term, I guess. I'm not sure how to best phrase it other than that. But it's a DBA who's a DBA by circumstance.
Casual DBA?
Yes, the actual DBA is there by accident.
Sort of the, oh, by the way, we need you to do this as well.
Yes. For example, you're a developer, and now we need to be a DBA.
Yeah, you were standing closest to the server when the last guy quit. Now it's your job.
Right. Yes.
The people just fall into it. And well, sometimes when the people fall into it, they recognize this is, hey, something I want to do, and they become a professional DBA. But a lot of them just do it because it's part of their job. In other words, they've been told to do it. They just do it. And those are the ones who don't make the big bucks because they just know enough to get by. They don't take any opportunity to challenge themselves or learn nothing, anything new. And they just get by from day to day. Be sure as long as the server's up, they're happy. If it's not up, well, they're going to be staying up all night, getting it all restored and going for the next day. But they're just basically there. They don't know how to do anything proactive. They just fight fires. And a lot of them get stressed out because they don't know their job very well and maybe hate the job and want to go do something else again, like development, which is stressful.
Sounds a lot like what we used to call webmasters back in 1999 or so.
Mm-hmm.
A few professionals that are really innovating and sort of pushing the envelope, and a lot of people that are, call themselves a webmaster, and then a whole slew of different people in between in the web development world. And we've seen that mature over time. And what do you see for the future of database administration? You pointed out, to use your example of SQL Server, things have become significantly more complicated in that application, especially in the most recent versions, all of these other ancillary apps attached to it. What's the specialization look like, and what's the future of database administration?
Yeah, well, right now, Microsoft, in their certification, they divide up the specialization in three areas, the admin, development, and the BI part.
Right.
But I think it's going to even be more than that eventually, because there's so many different areas that require so much in-depth knowledge. For example, it's a person who deals with fault tolerance and clustering. That's a whole specialty unto themselves. Or even just how to optimize a database to run on various SAN devices is a specialty unto itself.
Is that really a job all by itself, just tuning for SANs?
It would be not probably for a large company, but it would be for consultants.
Right.
Consultants are very often brought in to do that kind of work.
Certainly high availability specialists I've seen.
Yeah, high availability specialists. Of course, and now with report writing becoming more popular, somebody who can manage the reporting services, server, and also those how to design reports and manage those. In a large organization, that can be very extensive in an organization. They may have many, many servers throughout their company that are printing reports, and that can be very high maintenance type administrative work also in a system, in an organization. But coming back to my idea about the top 10%, the exceptional DBAs or professional DBAs versus the average DBA, what I kind of like to do is maybe talk a little bit about how you can become one, in other words, move from the average, novice, beginner DBA to the more exceptional DBA.
Right. So because it's not that hard to become a beginner DBA. It was literally you're standing close to the server or you've paid some interest to it. That's a pretty easy job to get. Now, how do I increase my income by nearly 50% and or, become a pro? What do I got to do?
Well, that's what I want to talk about because that's what's the things that's kind of fascinated me because I know what I've done personally and I've also know a lot of other Microsoft SQL Server MVPs, which all would be, of course, in the obviously professional category. And there are some certain characteristics that you will see common throughout all Microsoft MVPs and all other professional DBAs. And the very first one that seems really obvious, but it's really important, is that you have to love your work. You have to really enjoy that kind of work. In other words, and that encompasses things like taking responsibility. The DBAs, if you're a good DBA, you want to protect the organization's data. That's your job.
Right. And ultimately, you're taking on that responsibility.
Right. And most people don't realize they do that when they're DBAs. But if you take on that responsibility, that involves a lot more than just administrating a SQL Server. It involves setting up disaster recovery plans and actually practicing them, ensuring that they work. It involves making developers mad at you because you're enforcing security very strictly in your company and won't let them in the production database, and all the politics involved with that. So you have to really know what you want to do. You have to really enjoy that kind of work. You have to be a problem solver. You have to have the ability to work by yourself, but also at the same time with teams. Again, like most jobs, I guess, anymore, you have to do both of those.
Because I think most of the time, you're the only DBA in the company.
Yeah, very often, yes, you are the only DBA, or maybe just a small DBA team. And sometimes you're lumped with the developers, and sometimes you're lumped with the IT bland type professionals. Kind of varies from company to company. But usually, or quite often, you are separate from the developers. At least, ideally, you probably should be. It's in my opinion, because you need that isolation between the two groups. Otherwise, you get too cozy together and then you become a lax and security can become an issue.
And ultimately, developers aren't responsible for the fact that everybody's named John Smith. You are.
Yes. So the DBA has a lot of responsibility, so they have to, you know, accept that responsibility and consider this like a profession. Another key thing, of course, is obviously knowledge. The BNKM and the DBA is self-taught. You have to read a lot. Read magazines, read books, go to conferences, take classes. It's an ongoing process because every time a new version of SQL Server comes out, even though this last time we did have 5 years between versions, we're
going
to only have 3 years next time, that's still not very much time to keep up.
Some people are complaining that 3 years was too little time. They wanted longer.
Yes, I'd actually prefer it longer. I like the 4 to 5 year scale myself to try to keep up, but I have to admit, even now with SQL Server 2005 being out for 2 years, I don't know it all yet either.
No.
It just is so much to it. I just don't have the time to sit down and practice everything I want to practice.
Yeah, there's a lot to know there.
But another aspect of that, which I found for professional DBAs, not only do they like to learn, but most professional DBAs also like to share their knowledge. In other words, most DBAs just aren't really secret about their knowledge. In other words, they really want to share and help others. They love showing developers how to do things right. They love training new DBAs, help them along. Many of them are involved in forums and answering questions. Many of them are involved in local user groups or national user groups like PASS. And that's where you see most of the professional DBAs, that seem to be very active in the community. You don't see a lot of professional DBAs who are very isolated out by themselves, not knowing what's going on in the world of SQL Server. There are a few out there. I've run into a few that don't even know what PASS is, which has kind of surprised me. But there's very few of them. Most of them are very familiar with it and get very involved with the organization. So they like to share information. And another thing that I would suggest for DBA, of course, is to make take a long-term view of the job. And as part of any kind of DBA job, not only do you need to know the DBA job, you need to know your company's business really well. You need to know the data that's being stored in your databases. And that's something you don't really think about a lot. A lot of times, the actual content of the data in the databases themselves affect how you manage the data. So you need to know your organization and how it works. And kind of data that is stored. And one of the things I used to like to do is, and it sounds kind of a silly, I guess, maybe to some people, but I always volunteered for the dirtiest, hardest jobs when it came to IT and database. Usually a couple companies I've worked for, as well as a full-time DBA, we actually had multiple DBAs who were large enough to do that. There's always jobs people didn't want to do. So I'd always volunteer to do those. And part of the reason for that is because, again, I wanted to learn everything I could about the environment, but I also wanted to get in good course with my bosses and managers and let them know I'm serious about doing a good job. Again, I'm not one of those people who like to work 60 or 80 hours a week. I can usually work 40 hours a week and get everything done I need to get done. It's not like I'm like a workaholic. But I still like to go in and volunteer and say, hey, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this, even though I don't know how to do it, because it's going to force me to learn something new.
Still, I got to think, as a DBA, there's the occasional all-nighter. If the server's taking a header and you're in a disaster recovery mode, you have to keep on working until the job's done.
Yes, that's another thing, too. You have to be persistent and have this level of professionalism where, you get the job done no matter what it takes. Yes, I've been through that a number of times where, for whatever reason, we have a hardware failure or other kind of a problem, and then you start to a restore process, and then you have more problems, and you have more problems, and more problems, and it's 24, 36, 48 hours later before they're all solved, and you can't stop. It's kind of interesting experience. I've gone through that a couple different times.
And I think it's sort of an IT mentality, which is there's always going to be a crisis and we're going to work extended hours, which means we shouldn't be doing it routinely.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't tell the difference between your day-to-day work and the emergency work, you've got a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that most professional DBs also tend to be very proactive in their job. In other words, they try to prevent problems. One of the things I was really proud of in the last company I worked for, and my boss told me several times, is that he knew he could depend that my servers would always be up and running, which sounds kind of boring, you know. Well,
but it's also probably the highest compliment as an IT person you can be paid.
Yeah, I think so, too, because nobody had ever had any complaints. I mean, the server was virtually never down. It always ran nice and smoothly. People had access to it. And everything seemed very smoothly. For example, we had another DB at the company, and he was having problems constantly. The servers being up and down all the time for a variety of different reasons. And again, it seems very boring in many ways to have servers running smooth all the time. But that's what you want your life to be as a professional DBA. You want to be proactive. Sure, problems don't occur in the first place, so things work nice and smoothly, and you don't have any problems. You're not in this crisis mode all the time trying to solve problems. So you can sit back and relax and think about how I solve this problem rather than in crisis mode where you have to jump in and just fight a problem and try everything you can until it works.
That certainly provides you an opportunity for, doing your continuing education. If you're not spending time fighting fires all the time, then you're able to prepare for, the next set of technology or the next application that needs to be worked.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing, of course, again, most professional DBAs is that they will keep up on the new technology. For example, they'll go out and download SQL Server 2008 and run it in a virtual machine and start learning how it works. So when it does become available sometime, middle of next year or so, hopefully, they'll be up to speed on the product already. And same thing, we just go to PASS this month in Denver. There'll be a lot of sessions on 2008 because, again, Microsoft wants everybody up to speed as much as they can on the product and also, of course, provide last-minute feedback during the beta process.
So, Brad, I've sort of worn three big hats here, all of which have some very definite ties to database servers, a lot of the Microsoft SQL Server. First one is as an IT, professional IT manager and running the shop and having managed, teams that are running a lot of applications, but also as a development manager and managing DBAs and developers that really need to understand databases because they're talking to them, and especially when it comes to design, which kind of leads to my third card there, my third hat, which is as a security professional. And I can tell you that in those roles, I've seen an awful lot of junk out there, forgive the term, but just very, very messy or very sloppy, and a lot of insecure database design, programming on a database and in a database. Maybe I wonder if you have some thoughts about that. And especially in this day and age where I think a lot of databases are being interfaced by web applications that are, on the public internet or an extranet,
mm-hmm.
What's the most important things that database professionals need to be thinking about and really need to be aware of today?
The ideal situation would be is for the DBAs to work with the developers during the actual development process. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen as much as it should, because the administrative DBA knows about the security. They know about the database design, what what needs to be done for ideal performance. So often I've seen in so many shops is that the DBAs, these administrative DBAs, often don't get involved until after the application is in testing or in production. And that's when all the problems occur, either with performance or security or whatever.
And it becomes the DBA's fault that the app is late because they haven't secured it properly. They're not managing data in a safe way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the DBA needs to get involved earlier, and whoever's designing the application, the project manager or whoever's in charge, needs to have an administrative DBA on the team. It may not be a full-time job, but someone who can watch what's going on, see the design, look at the prototypes as they come through, and provide feedback on what needs to be done if it's not being done right away so it can be fixed before it actually becomes a problem. I've seen many applications, they said, have virtually no security because developers don't want to learn how to use security. I mean, it's a pain in the neck. So what they'll often do is just basically open it up for everybody and use a SA equivalent type account or a DBO equivalent type account to allow everybody into the database, which of course is a disaster when it comes to a security. Enforcing security is a tough thing to do. And one of the things I was always fighting with my developers was security, because we had a development database, we had a test database, and we had a production database. And each of them had different sets of security. You know, obviously in the developer side, we gave them more security, more ability than normal, so they could create objects and test and practice and play with things and whatever. Then once those things are tested out, we moved over to a test environment, which more highly simulated the real environment, which much tighter security. And of course, oftentimes what would happen is things would break then, because again, the developer had not considered security at all in the first place. So when we start putting security into it, things didn't work the way they expected it to work. And of course, at some point, when all those problems worked out, we moved to production. Even then, we probably make the security even a little tighter at that point. So the only people who can get in is the actual users. Well, in the test machine, you'd have testers and DBAs and maybe some developers into it to a certain degree. So I think getting the DBA in early would help a lot of jobs.
So from the DBA's point of view, the idea of pushing on, I want to be on the team, I want to be in those meetings, I want to have an opportunity to influence the design early.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. So many times I've heard that exact same thing. DBA saying, no, if you only asked me ahead of time, I could show you how to prevent this problem. It saved you lots of money and time.
Right.
And it's always too late at that point, because a lot of times the application now is in production, and all you can do is just start patching or do whatever it takes to fix it, so it's at least running until they get a chance to go through another complete cycle, perhaps, and get it redesigned or fixed the way it should be actually fixed.
Right.
So they do need to be involved more up front.
Yeah, one of the I think, important messages I know in my experience for the developers out there is that stored procedures can be your absolute best friend from a security standpoint. They can also be truly your worst enemy. And mm-hmm. And design, I think you're absolutely right. That design phase is absolutely critical to have database engineers, designers, and administrators involved in that process.
And one of the things I used to do, too, is I used to, about once a year, give a half-day training session to developers on DBA-type stuff, which I don't know if that was really enough or not. It's hard enough to get even that going. You know, most developers weren't even interested in coming to the session. But he had to right. go to the boss and say, hey, you know, we have these problems throughout the year. We get new developers on the team constantly. They don't have a good background databases. We just need to at least teach them something, some basics. So at least I got the managers usually to force the developers, at least the new ones, to come and spend at least a half a day once a year, which is not a whole lot, of course. But it's better than nothing, showing, you know, really obvious problems and things that you see over and over and over again that the developers make in terms of common mistakes. And let them know these exist. Please don't do these kinds of things. That was a small attempt. Was helpful though. But again, it's very, very small. And I'd actually see more of that go on because so many developers just don't know databases. I mean, it's not necessarily their fault. It just matter like everything else. We all have only a limited amount of time that we can spend doing or learning our tasks. And somehow or another, we have to kind of break out those responsibilities a little bit better than we do now. So we know how to communicate and talk to each other a little bit better, so developers know how to access the databases in a proper method. And that comes back, again, to help, I think, where it helps to define what DBA roles actually are, you know, what a mystery DBA does, what a developer DBA does, and BI and reporting and so forth. I think that would help you more differentiate what different kinds of jobs there are and what the responsibilities are.
The PASS conference is coming up, isn't it? In fact, I think when this show goes live, PASS will be going on. It's in Denver this year?
Yes, in Denver. It starts a week from next Monday.
So September 18th to 21st.
Yes.
And the PASS website?
Yes, that's at PASS.org.
Or SQLPASS.org.
That's right. SQLPASS.org.
SQLPASS.org. Our guests have been Brad McGeehee. And Brad, thanks very much for coming on the show. Really appreciate your thoughts around DBA education.
Thanks, Brad.
Hey, thank you very much for your time.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.